The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Between the Synapse with Mark Tobin. If you're looking to learn something useful, you've come to the wrong place. But as Belushi once said, it don't cost nothing. So, let's get things started. Here's Mark Tobin.
Good afternoon and welcome to Between the Synapse. We've got an exciting show with two guests. We're going to be talking about two very separate subjects, the NBA playoffs and Israel in the Middle East. We're going to get started by talking a little bit of the NBA playoffs with Travis Hale of Pounding the Rock Sports Blog. Travis is a writer not only for Pounding the Rock, but he also writes for Viva the Raiders, I believe, which is about the Texas Tech Red Raiders. Travis, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. Trying to talk everybody in the office off the ledge, but other than that, things are going well.
Yeah, well, that was my first question. So what the hell happened last night?
I don't know. It was a surreal, ugly game. I mean, you know, it started off deep.
And by the way, just for everybody else out there who don't only pay attention to the San Antonio Spurs, we're talking about the San Antonio Spurs-Dallas Mavericks series. Last night, the Mavericks tied the series with a thrumping. Is that the right word of the San Antonio Spurs? In game two, even series 1-1.
Yeah, thumping, beat down, however you want to classify it, but it certainly wasn't pretty. That, you know, the Spurs were really uncharacteristic looking in the way that they played. They had 24 turnovers and only made 16 out of 29 free throws, and just looked really out of sorts for most of the game. So hopefully, with the way that they're notorious for playing well on the road, that they can wipe that away and get home court advantage back on Saturday, and then everybody can relax a little bit.
So, you know, the big question that I have is, it, you know, the Spurs really had almost kind of a two-week layoff before they played on Sunday. If you count the time before the playoffs started and the games, it didn't mean much. And when a team does that, they, you know, they get out of sync.
I would even argue that they really haven't played any meaningful games since the Heat game in early March. You know, they had, of course, that was in the middle of their long winning streak, and they had several games that were close between now and then. But, you know, as far as just having the minutes by the main guys, Tim and Tony and Kawhi and Green, and, you know, the starters, and then you throw in Ginobili, they really haven't had an opportunity for those guys to spend a lot of time together in several weeks. So I think it's going to take some time to get back into a rhythm. But you know, as you said, on top of that, it's really been 2 weeks since they've done anything at all. So you can really tell. I mean, it's really evident so far that they just seem to be out of sync. And you got to give credit to the Mavericks too, because they're exploiting that. They're really causing havoc. I mean, they're hammering guys when they get down inside, and they're really pressuring the ball to create turnovers. So it's, you know, they're going to have to make some adjustments. And Greg Popovich being 3-time coach of the year, if there's anybody that can adjust, it's going to be him. So I'm still pretty confident in them being able to pull things out, but hopefully got to see some improvements on Saturday.
Yeah, no, I hope so. And I'll give some credit to the Mavericks, but I'm not going to give much to Mark Cuban, if that's okay.
No,
you know, I can't stand. You know, when I see him in the Spurs building rejoicing, that just kills me. I gotta admit that. Let's talk about the rest of the playoffs. Anything stand out for you?
You know, and I kind of wrote about it this morning in a recap of the game last night, but just the overall playoffs in general so far have really been sort of odd. I mean, who would have imagined that the Rockets and Bulls would be down 0-2, you know, as it stands right now. And then the Thunder struggled in their game against the Grizzlies the other night. And, you know, the Heat have gotten out to a 2-0 start, but it's not like they're looking like world beaters. And the Pacers, I have really no idea what's going on in Indiana. But
do you think McHale's out in Houston if they lose the series, particularly if they get swept?
If they get swept, it's a possibility. I think he's pretty safe. You know, they had a really good regular season, and I think there'd be more questions about some of the players. But I think McHale's pretty safe.
And what's this? I've heard at least two NBA apologies, or maybe that's not the right word, but corrections for fouls that were incorrectly called. One was in Game 1 of the Clippers-Warriors, and one was in Game 1 of Rockets-Portland. And the NBA came out and said, yeah, the foul was incorrectly called. They didn't do anything about it. It didn't change the outcome of the game. Is this something that we're going to see more of in the post-Stern era, where the NBA is willing to say, hey, we made a mistake, and that way people sort of feel better about it?
Yeah, I think it's a double-edged sword because, you know, Silver's come out and said he wants to be more transparent with things like that and blown calls and mistakes like that. But it, like you said, it really doesn't help. I mean, how is it supposed to make you feel better if they come out and say that they made a mistake, but it doesn't change the outcome of the game? And I'm not a Dwight Howard fan by any means, but the foul called on him the other night was pretty ridiculous. I mean, there was no way that was a foul, and you know, it only, you know, kind of feel a little sympathy for Rockets fans in that situation, because there's nothing that, you know, they can come out and say they're sorry for it, but it doesn't, at the end of the day, it doesn't do any good. They're still down 0-2 now, and at that point they lost the first one. So again, it's, you know, I guess it's admirable that Silver's wanting to do that and be more transparent, but it's if you're on the other end of it as a fan, it's not going to help you at all.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. And look, the teams are close. The West is still far superior to what's going on in the East. I don't know when that'll ever be corrected. It's going to take years, I think, before that balances out. And, you know, even with God himself, you know, now president of the New York Knicks, that franchise is still years away, I think, from competing.
Yeah, there's no way there's a quick fix in New York. I mean, they have so many troubles and issues that you know, it's going to take years to get everything corrected, with salary cap wise and the things that they have to pay out, and just to get a foundation set there. So, you know, it goes in cycles. You saw it in the NFL for several years where the NFC dominated the AFC, and you know, it happens that way. And so I would imagine at some point it's going to cycle back, and there's going to be some really strong teams in the East. But as of now, it's the West is just a gauntlet. And you know, again, back to the Spurs, people that are really panicking over the Spurs. I mean, the Mavericks are a good team. They won 49 games this year, which would have put them, I think, the third seed in the East. So it's not like they're playing some patsy in the first round, which, you know, I guess people have gotten accustomed to that your first round matchup, if you're the number one seed, should be a rollover series. But it's not going to be that way. And then if they get past the Mavericks, their prize for that is probably going to be the Trailblazers and LaMarcus Aldridge, who just eats them alive. So it's a tough slog for the next several weeks.
Yeah, and I guess that's even worse for you, knowing that you've got University of Texas players, whether they're in Oklahoma with KD or with LaMarcus in Portland. So
it's like getting killed twice.
Yeah. Well, by the way, I enjoyed your interview with Kingsbury, the new coach of Texas Tech, or second year coach.
Yeah, thank
and I'm sure that you asked him what he thought about the University of Texas's run for the national championship this year.
He didn't have a comment on that.
Yeah, well, maybe next time. Well, listen, Travis, we'll have you back as the playoffs progress. But I want to thank you for joining us, and we will be back after the break with Marcus Scheff to talk about the Middle East and Israel. Travis, thanks, and stick around.
All right, thanks, Mark.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. All round the outermost rim of the shield, he set the mighty stream of the river Oceanus, creating Achilles' shield in Homer's The Iliad, Book 18.
Rachel Carson, in The Sea Around Us, said, "All at last, return to the sea, to Oceanus, the ocean river, like the ever-flowing stream of time, the beginning and the end."
Moyer's Environmental Dialogues with Dr. Rob Moyer offers lively dialogue and revealing narrative inquiry into how individuals are overcoming obstacles and creating a greener and blue planet Earth.
Tune in Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Are you a single parent trying to create the balance between home life and work life? You may be running a successful business, but how are your relationships with your family and children? If you're one of the thousands of people trying to juggle it all, tune in to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood, hosted by Chris Efesiou. Chris is the portrait of the success story. Coming to the U.S. with no language skills, founding and growing several businesses while raising his daughter from age 7 to adulthood as a single dad. Listen every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Between the Synapse with your host, Mark Tobin. If you want in on this week's discussion, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to mbt@betweenthesynapse.com or on Twitter at @BetweenTSynapse. Now, back to the show.
Well, welcome back, and thanks for listening. There might not be any more controversial area of the globe than the Middle East. It is in the headlines just about every day. And today, we're fortunate to have from Tel Aviv, Marcus Scheff, who's the executive director of the Israel Project's Jerusalem office. Marcus, how are you?
I'm very well, Mark. How are you? Good to hear your voice again.
Yeah, same here. Now, Marcus is actually born in South Dakota. He moved to Israel where they taught him how to speak with an English accent so he would sound more intelligent.
It didn't work, though, unfortunately.
Well, you know, it sounds good to me. Now, actually, Marcus is originally from England, as you can guess, moved to Israel after graduation. From Leeds University, right?
Absolutely. Born and bred in Manchester, went to Leeds University and moved to Israel in the late 1980s.
And you have been in the political and media business ever since.
Yeah, that is correct.
And I think one of the most influential experiences you've had, if you have and still do actually, you're a captain in the IDF reserve. But you served in the public affairs division during two conflicts, both the Lebanese War, as well as the Second Intifada, right?
Well, that's right. Actually, Mark, they promoted me at the grand old age of I won't tell you what. They promoted me to major. But yes, I did my conscript service in infantry during the First Intifada. And as you know, in Israel, we mark all our service by various military conflicts. So I did my, as I say, my original military service in infantry, and then I did my reserve service in infantry for many, many years. And then, you know, I got a little bit, old and decrepit. So they threw me out of infantry and put me in the spokesperson's office, where I have been ever since. But I was in the spokesperson's office during the Lebanon War and during the Second Intifada. And, you know, those were clearly tough times and sometimes difficult to, explain what those actions were and how, you know, defending Israelis against the kind of terror which was pouring in from the West Bank in the Second Intifada, or the 200 rockets a day which were being fired from southern Lebanon into Israel's northern communities, how, you know, ultimately the army's job is to defend citizens, and there was no choice but to root out that terror.
No, that's exactly right. It's a tough job, and I think because of the work of people like you and bringing in a new understanding of how to communicate, that message has been conveyed in a much better way. And, you know, you've appeared on TV and radio, you know, CNN, NBC, ABC, and even Al Jazeera regularly. So let me first just thank you for slumming and coming on my show.
Not at all, Mark. It's a real pleasure. Now, Mark and I, you know, we go back a long way, and I have such respect for what you're doing, for your views. It's a real pleasure to be your guest tonight.
Well, thank you. And look, let me just start off with the most recent news. 7 years ago, Hamas went a different direction than the Palestinian Authority, and they took over Gaza, and they left the West Bank to the Palestinian Authority, and essentially there have been two governments for the Palestinians. And they've had, I believe, four attempts at reconciliation and reunion. And just yesterday, they basically said the fifth time's a charm. They announced that they were intending to hold talks on elections and a unity government. So what's the status? Is this gonna happen this time?
Well, that's, you know, the question which everyone is asking. And Mark, you're absolutely right. That is clearly the background. Palestinians have been split up, if you like, into two governments. The Palestinian Authority has been a Fatah, a Palestinian Authority, you know, a Palestinian nationalist organization run by Abu Mazen from Ramallah. And then in Gaza, you have a, you know, essentially an Islamist jihadi organization, which has been at odds with the Palestinian Authority. And clearly its raison d'etre has been firing rockets at Israelis, 10,000 rockets in the last 10 years. And they're focused on trying to kill as many Israelis as they possibly could. Of course, Israel withdrew from Gaza in 2005 and withdrew in hopes for peace. And what Israel got instead were those rockets being fired at them even before the Hamas takeover of Gaza in 2007, even before, between 2005 and 2007. So what we have now is an interesting situation, but a very sad one, I think it's fair to say. The Fatah and Hamas, as you correctly say, Mark, have had all these attempts at reconciliation. What makes a difference this time? Well, I think it's because they're both very weak. Hamas was backed by Iran, to an extent moved away from Iran because during the Syrian civil war, which unfortunately still rages on with all the horrendous casualties which that entails, they, as a Sunni rather than a Shia organization, had to leave Damascus. The Muslim Brothers took over in Egypt. They found a new ally. And then, of course, as we all know, Morsi was ousted, and Egypt is back in the hands of the military. And so they find themselves, frankly, friendless. They find themselves at a crossroads. They find themselves weak. Abu Mazen also finds himself weak inside of Ramallah. So this on the face of it, is a good time for reconciliation. Having said that, it's one thing them agreeing on elections, and they agree on elections. It's entirely a different thing for Hamas to give over their arms to the Palestinian Authority, their long-range rockets, the ground-to-air missiles which they possess. You know, if you're going to be one people reconciled, then there needs to be one army. Will Hamas agree to that? And frankly, will Fatah agree to Hamas back in the West Bank? So complicated. But, you know, from the Israeli perspective and the U.S. perspective as well, this is really very sad because Hamas has not changed. It does not renounce terror. It does not recognize Israel. And it does not accept past agreements. So it's a extremely retrograde step for Israel when we are negotiating with Fatah, if you like, with the Palestinian Authority. They then bring into their midst, their organization, Hamas, which is, you know, a unreconstructed terrorist organization. How are we supposed to talk peace with the Palestinians when they have this terrorist organization in their midst? They quite clearly have stated they want to destroy Israel. That is at odds with the idea of making peace with Israel. So we have a real problem. And as you know, tonight, Israel has stated that it can no longer continue negotiations in good faith with an organization that has taken upon itself to be in reconciliation with Hamas.
Right. And part of the issue has always been that the PA at the assistance of the United States, that if Hamas is going to join, that they've got to recognize previous agreements of the Palestinian Authority that go back to Oslo in 1993. And those agreements recognize Israel's existence, which Hamas refuses to do. And it seems, and it nowhere has that issue been resolved, even in the most recent talks. And how can they get past that, or are they just going to bypass it?
Well, I don't think they can get past that. I think that is the long and the short of it. Ultimately, you know, Abu Mazen made a choice. He could have chosen peace negotiations, or he could have chosen national reconciliation with Hamas, and he chose the latter. You know, it is entirely legitimate that he can make any choices that he wants, but frankly, the wrong choice if you are looking for a real, a sincere peace between Israelis and Palestinians and a proper future for Israeli children and Palestinian children. You know, this is not going to bring it. This is going to bring turmoil. This is going to bring further instability in what is, let's face it, an extremely unstable Middle East.
Yeah, and let's talk about that unstable Middle East. You know, Israel's never lived in a neighborhood that they would refer to as friendly. But over the last 2 to 3 years, that neighborhood has become much rougher. And let's talk about it from the perspective of the Israelis in terms of how they look at their strategic situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, the neighborhood, you know, clearly has changed in a great way. The Arab Spring, as it was known, or the turmoil in the Middle East, which might be a better way of putting it, brought with it promise. You know, brought with it the promise of democracy, of freedom, of, you know, real dialogue, real communication, both for people within their countries. You know, that is to say, people could actually talk freely for the first time. And, of course, for us Israelis, the hope was that, you know, we could be able to talk freely to them. You know, that hope is still alive, but unfortunately, you know, on the borders of Israel, in the north, in the south, and possibly even to the east, you know, we are facing real challenges. There was, of course, a great irony, Mark, as you know, which was that, you know, Israel was in a state of war with Syria. But really, the last real conflict that Israel had with Syria was, you know, way back in the 1970s, and even in 1982, when there was the first Lebanon War. You know, it was very limited, the kind of conflict which the Syrians were involved with. So it was an incredibly quiet border. And I remember as a, you know, soldier in my reserve duty, spending a month patrolling that border, and it was the most boring 1 month you could possibly imagine. You know, we got into our into our patrol vehicles. We went up, we went down, we went back, and that was it. What we have now is a Syria which has collapsed as a nation state and the emergence of what is called non-state entities, which is, I guess, a very political science way of saying terrorist organizations. There are something like 17 jihadi organizations, as we all know, within Syria at the moment, al-Nusra being the most obvious and famous one, and Israel now has al-Qaeda on its border on the Golan, something which I don't think any of us would have thought could possibly happen, let's say, you know, even 4 years ago. So that brings with it, as you say, Mark, tremendous changes, and changes which need to be taken into account in terms of Israel's defense doctrine. You know, the South has its own problems. As I was saying before, you know, the military are back in control in Egypt, and that has brought stability with it. But within the Sinai Peninsula, which is, of course, you know, with which Israel has a border, which is part of Egypt, there are jihadi organizations who are now firing rockets at Israel's southernmost town, Eilat, and also firing rockets at Jordan. Now, the Egyptian military don't want to put up with this, and quite right, too. And they are working to resolve the situation. But it brings a new dimension of threat for the Israeli military. As far as Jordan is concerned, which is, of course, Israel's long eastern border, we hope, we absolutely hope and pray that the Hashemite regime will stay strong. And so far, it is staying strong. But you know what? They have a million refugees from Syria. This is sapping their economic strength, and it is creating turmoil within that country. And, of course, the last border is Lebanon, which is as difficult as ever. Hezbollah control, as you know, Mark, southern Lebanon. And whereas they might be very busy at the moment inside of Syria supporting Assad, and there are many people who say they made the difference between Assad falling and not falling, and I happen to fall into the camp of those who believe that, they will, at some point, be done in Syria, come back and do what they always do, which is attempt to create a conflict with Israel, and that means firing hundreds of rockets at Israelis going about their everyday business. So, you know, the threat.
And so, hold on, I want to. Obviously, there's a lot of difficult situations that have been created. And if anyone has any questions for our guest Marcus Sheff of the Israel Project, please call at 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. Marcus, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to finish with two things. One, just a little bit on what is happening on the Iranian front, and then maybe you could leave us with a little bit of positive news.
Absolutely.
And we'll be back on Between the Synapse.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com. Very rarely does our news media spotlight some of the good things that are happening in our world. For more of these good stories and the people that are creating them, tune in to Bread for the Journey with Mariana Cacciatore. Whether these good acts stem from personal tragedy or just a desire to help out and make this a better world in which to live, you'll find inspiration in every week's program. Connect with those that are doing something great for a change. Listen for Bread for the Journey, Saturdays at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Each week, Jimmy Gould brings you the stories and the people that you want to hear about. Tune in to A Current Life to hear about the journey to success, how our guests became the people they are today, and the highs and lows they experienced along the way. Each hour will leave you inspired and entertained as Jimmy gets up close and personal with every week's guest and shares ideas you can identify with and apply to your own life. A Current Life with Jimmy Gould airs Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Between the Synapse with your host, Mark Tobin.
If you want in on this week's discussion, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to mbt@betweenthesynapse.com or on Twitter at BetweenTSynapse. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back, and thanks for listening to Between the Synapse. We're speaking with Marcus Sheff, live from Tel Aviv, Israel. Marcus, born in England, a citizen of Israel for well over two decades. Marcus, thanks again for joining us.
Pleasure.
As mentioned before the break, Iran, at least since the mid-90s, has been Israel's most potent existential threat. And there have been agreements aimed at limiting the ability for Iran to produce weapons-grade uranium, which they could use to produce a nuclear weapon. Where are the Israelis on the Iranian situation at present?
Well, Mark, I would love to get on to the good news, but unfortunately, as you say, you know, Iran is not it.
I'm saving that for the end. You know, let's leave on a positive note.
No, exactly. You know, I know you know very well, Mark, the current situation in terms of Iran is, you know, extraordinarily worrying. Iran is, you know, the one clear existential threat to Israel. And why do I say that? Because it is a country which has, for the last two decades, been absolutely laser-focused on developing a nuclear military ability, number one. Number two, they have stated extraordinarily clearly over a period of years that they do not recognize the legitimacy of the state of Israel. And, you know, leaders have even said that they would, having a nuclear capability, that they would be armed against Israel. And number three, they've been extraordinarily clever about this. You know, they've taken it slowly. They have stopped development over the years when the heat's been turned up on them. And when the heat's been turned down again, you know, they've gone back to developing. And so we are now in one of those situations where that is exactly where we are. You know, if you look at it in terms of timeline rather than in terms of what is happening now, I don't see this as a situation of breakthrough where the international community, the famous P5+1, as it is known, has managed to break through the Iranian nuclear, you know, military enterprise and is convinced that they shouldn't be doing this. I see this as one of those periods, and we've seen them before, when they have frozen, because, you know, the sanctions have been, you know, very, very damaging to their economy. And, you know, they're playing nicely, and Rouhani smiles very nicely, of course, President Rouhani, the president of Iran. And so they are, you know, they're playing the game very well. That's now. What about next year? What about the time when, you know, the sanctions are lifted, the international community turns the heat off? Believe me when I tell you, the Iranians will be back on enriching uranium, but much faster, much better. They are single-mindedly trying to create this nuclear military enterprise. It's very, very difficult to see how they're going to be stopped now.
Right, and that's the question. I mean, people throw the term moderate, and it's applied in Iran in terms of, well, the moderate president. Well, it's also relative to the previous president, who was so far from being a moderate that when you compare him to the current one, you know, almost anybody would be more moderate than him.
Right,
exactly. It presents a confusing terminology, I think, to the international community.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, Ahmadinejad was, you know, so loudly, even, you know, crazily extreme in his statements and in his stated views that, you know, he left no room for doubt. Rouhani is clever. He is more subtle.
And, you know, he has managed to charm people. The charm offensive has been extremely effective. I think there have been many people who have been very open to the charm offensive. And that has left, you know, that has been a great boon for Iran. And, you know, there are other factors involved. There are young Iranians who, you know, clearly would like to see changes within Iran. Now, that's one thing. You know, they might want more openness. They might want less religiosity in the streets. Will that, is that equate to Iranians saying, we need leadership which will now stop the nuclear program? No. That is not what's happening, and that's not what is going to happen. And unfortunately, this is being confused. You know, the possible liberalism from within with any ending to the nuclear program.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like, you know, Putin riding around with his shirt off on a horse. I mean, you know, he may look, you know, free and easy, but, you know, he's still putting people in the gulag. That's for my next show. Tell me something good, Marcus.
I can tell you many, many things good, Mark. Here I am in Tel Aviv on a Thursday night, and I've got to tell you, this is the most vibrant city, you know, you could possibly imagine. Downtown Tel Aviv is bustling with life. It's bustling with young people. It is, you know, full of good spirit. It's a wonderful city. You know, Israel is a wonderful country. It's a country of innovation. It's a country of high tech. It's a country of Western liberal values. It's a country of freedoms. You can be who you want to be. You can say what you want to say. You can live any life that you want to live. You know what? There are really some quite remarkably great things about this country. It might not be a great neighborhood, but the country is doing well.
That's good to hear. And I want to thank you again for joining us. And just for our listeners, I want to let them know that you have taken time away from your wife's birthday party. It is 8:40 p.m. in Tel Aviv. And so you're in, a transition between the first and second parts of the party. So please wish her a very happy birthday. And I have one last question for you. We're going to see Springsteen in about a week or two. I understand that you actually played guitar for Springsteen one time back in England. Is that right?
Well, I played guitar in a rock and roll band here in Israel. I did hold Springsteen's guitar, and I did tune it for him. I wouldn't go so far as to say I played for him.
Really?
You know, he's the boss. You can't compete with the boss, I'm afraid. Thank you for the birthday wishes to him, Val. I will give that to her. And it's been a real pleasure being on your show. Good to speak to you again.
All right. Well, listen, thanks again. Take care, Marcus.
Thanks a lot, Mark. All the best.
All right. Bye-bye. The challenges in the Israel and the Middle East are tremendous. And I hope that by listening today, you've got a little bit of glimpse of just how complicated things can be. You have the headlines of one day, just literally yesterday, of unity amongst the Palestinians. And now we learn one day later that the chances of a unity government actually being fulfilled are already diminished. Things happen very, very quickly in the Middle East. And if you want to learn more, check out some of the pieces I've written on my blog at www.betweenthesynapse.com. If you have any comments about either the NBA playoffs or Israel and the Middle East, it's not too late to get in on the conversation at 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. I saved the this week's synopsis for the end of the show because I wanted to get to our guests. And one of the things that I saw in today's news, and I missed the show, but I did catch the video this morning. John Stewart has had an ongoing feud with Sean Hannity, but I guess who doesn't? Anyway, he referred to Sean Hannity. He said that he was the Arby's of news. And I have to say that was really harsh. I thought that was over the top. Because if I'm Arby's, I should be offended. And I'd be getting my lawyers together right now. Also, the 38-year-old and first U.S. winner of the Boston Marathon since 1983, and I'm going to mispronounce the last name, but Meb Keflezighi, whatever. I should have figured that out before the show. Won the Boston Marathon, and he wasn't wearing Adidas. He wasn't wearing ASICS. He was wearing Skechers. In fact, he was dropped by Nike 2 years ago. Skechers offered him the Aging Runner a lifeline that not only helped pay his expenses, but made his ass look really, really good. I have a couple more items, but before we cover those, which include a pot stealing and selling elementary kids, as well as a controversial plea agreement in San Francisco. But we will get to those after this break on Between the Synapse. Stick around. Thanks.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
It's time to take a new look at some of life's changing moments. It's time to listen to an expert who has been there and can provide insight through experience, studies, and enlightening guests. Tune in to Illuminating Now, Lindsay's Life Secrets. Host Lindsay Levinson takes a look at relationships, parenting, health and wellness, divorce, depression, sexuality, philanthropy, and mental health. You'll look at everything you know in a different way. Illuminating Now, Lindsay's Life Secrets, airs Wednesdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you're listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
What if there was a radio show that could demonstrate how we can cut your taxes in half without diminishing needed government services? One that could explain how to create tens of millions of jobs at no cost to taxpayers, as well as fantastic yet easily affordable health care. Side effects include cutting crime rates nationwide, providing better education for our children, international peace and harmony, and protecting your private personal data from government intrusion. Tune in to Libertarians Working for You with Carla Howell, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Between the Synapse with your host, Mark Tobin. If you want in on this week's discussion, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to mbt@betweenthesynapse.com or on Twitter at BetweenTSynapse. Now, back to the show.
All right. Well, welcome back to Between the Synapse. Get in on the action at 866-472-5788, whatever is on your mind. Please don't share it with me. No, whatever you want to talk about, give me a call. So we've got so far two and maybe soon to be three states that have legalized the use of marijuana. Well, there was an interesting story today about an elementary school in Colorado. It seems that several elementary school students were suspended on Tuesday after school officials discovered that they were not only selling but bartering stolen loose leaf marijuana and edible forms of the drug at school. I have two reactions to this story. First, I'm very happy to hear that children are being suspended for something worthwhile and not for some of the silly things that have been making news, like accidentally forgetting to remove a pocket knife from a backpack after a scout camping trip, or making a gun with a finger, or any of these other sort of zero tolerance rules that some students break that they have zero intention of breaking, and that somehow, you know, make the news, and these kids end up not only being suspended, but often being sent to an alternative school for, you know, 3-6 weeks or even longer. Second, I am a little surprised that in a state with such a high marijuana IQ, and yes, I did intend that pun, that even children should know that that loose-leaf marijuana, it's really about the buds and not the leaves. You know, there's got to be some additional education for the kids in some of these states if these laws are really going to have the purpose that that they were set out to do. On a more serious note, this past August in San Francisco, in-house security video of 31-year-old multimillionaire tech entrepreneur Gurbash Chahal allegedly captured him beating and kicking his girlfriend 117 times in a 30-minute attack. According to reports, he also attempted to smother her with a pillow while threatening to kill her. Last week, he pled guilty to one charge of domestic violence battery and one charge of battery, and was sentenced to 25 hours of community service, 3 years probation, and a 52-week domestic violence training course. I assume that's on how to prevent engaging in domestic violence. No prison at all. By avoiding a felony conviction, he can remain on the board of his company, Random One. Now, while I can't fault the DA for accepting the plea agreement after the judge ruled the video inadmissible, saying that the police obtained it without a warrant due to the concern that Chahal would erase it, the judge obviously disagreed, and I don't know enough about that decision to say whether the judge was wrong or right, but also because Chahal's girlfriend withdrew her testimony and refused to cooperate with the prosecution. But what I can fault are those that continue to do business and support Chahal as if nothing happened. Chahal remains a successful motivational speaker, writer, lecturer, and publisher of inspirational social media posts, including 15 Things Leaders Never Do. I checked that list, and kicking and beating up your girlfriend isn't on it. Next week on the show, I mentioned that we're going to be talking about Mr. Putin. I'm going to be welcoming an old friend of mine, Dr. Jonathan Adelman of Denver University, who is not only an expert on Russia, but he's also an expert on revolutions. We're going to be talking about Mr. Putin and what's going on in Ukraine, with the latest developments, but trying to better understand what Putin and Russia want with the region, and what we can expect down the road in terms of the relationship between the United States and Russia. Dr. Edelman, who was Condoleezza Rice's dissertation advisor at the University of Denver, has been studying Russia as well as China for well over four decades. And I know of no one in this in the United States, in the academic community, with any more knowledge on Soviet and Russian studies than him. So I'm very excited to have him on the show next Thursday, which will be Thursday noon Central and 1 o'clock Eastern Time, 10 o'clock Pacific. Please, if you know anybody that would like to listen, tell them that they can listen to the podcast. It'll be available sometime tonight. They can grab it on my blog. I will post it, www.betweenthesynapse. You can also find it on my Twitter, Mark Tobin, at BetweenTSynapse, and Facebook as well, which is Between the Synapse on Facebook. I want to thank both of my guests, Travis Hale from Pounding the Rock, which is a blog of the Spurs. I can't hide my bias in terms of being a Spurs fan, but we will talk all sports, not just about the teams that that I support. I want to thank the Voice America team and my producer, Doug McCormick. I want to thank the engineer for my show, Matt the Monk Wubner. And check out BTS on Facebook and Twitter. I want to thank everyone for listening. And see you next week on Between the Synapse.
Thanks again for joining us this week. Mark Tobin and Between the Synapse will transmit once again next Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. And remember, you never know what lies between the synapse.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.